As Tony has reminded us, we're going to come back to what we were looking back in October and have a look at what Paul has to say about a Christian's mind. Initially, the first week or the first in the series was looking at a Christian should have a happy mind, and the theme of Philippians is rejoicing and joy. And if we're going to have it, it's really comes back to our mind and our attitude, and Paul deals with it. And it's been a problem for many years. And it's interesting, while I was away, you'd seem to have a different resources to look at in books and magazines, I guess, and different reading material. And it was surprising what I read while I was away to do with me a Christian's mind. And can I just read some words that some people have said, and some of them you may know, and or the name may ring a bell with you. And one is George Malik, and he was a previous Secretary General of the United Nations. Now, he was a Christian man, but this is what he had to say, and listen to it. "Believe me, my friends, the mind today is in profound trouble, perhaps more than ever before. How to order the mind on sound Christian principles at the heart of where it is formed and informed is one of the greatest themes that can be considered." A Christian writer by the name of Blaines said this: "The scandal of Christianity today is this. We can sing Christian hymns, we can go to church as Christians, but we don't think as Christians. And as today, we just want to look at just a few verses and consider some things. We just pray that the challenge that came to me will challenge each one of us. We've thought about a Christian as he thinks, and we thought that he should be rejoicing and be happy because of the gospel. We've thought about a Christian and he should be humble, and we are given the example of the Lord Jesus. We thought about a Christian and that his mind should be on heavenly things because that's where his destiny is. And today we want to have a look at what Paul again says about a Christian, and it was entitled, We Should Have a Holy Mind. As we look at this portion, there's three things Paul brings out, and he's again talking about rejoicing and that we should have joy and rejoice. And he says that we're to have a pure mind, we're to be marked by prayerful habits, and that peace will be guard our minds, and it's the peace of God. Now, peace is not something that comes naturally, and it's something that we always have. It is to be guarded, and it says that we're to have the peace of God is to guard our minds and our hearts. And in this portion, I'll just read what Vine has to say regarding the heart and mind, as Paul brings it out here, and he says this, that the heart denotes man's entire mental and moral activities. Peace should guard them. And then he says, but our hearts and minds. And what does he mean by the mind? He says it's the seat of reflective consciousness. It comprises the faculties of perceiving, knowing, judging, determining. He says this, it comprehends all our thinking power. Peace is to guard it. But look what he further says, and as Jason read that portion, he says it's the peace of God is to guard our minds. But read a little bit further on what he says, and who's to guard it and give this peace? It's the very God of peace. It's to be maintained. Now, if we're going to know joy and rejoicing, we need peace. Now, there's trouble on every hand, and there's so many things that can upset us. and break that peace, and we not to maintain it. It says, the peace of God will guard our hearts, and the God of peace will do it. What's our part? Now, we're not going to have time to look at a pure mind, prayerful habits, and then this peace. We're going to have a look at our part, and that is a pure mind. Now, our mind and our brain is a marvellous thing. If you try to read about it and learn something about it scientifically, don't come to me. I can only quote some of the things I read. But it says this. I think it was the encyclopedia said this. The human brain consists of about 12 to 14 billion cells, but this is only a shadow of its complexity. Each cell sends out thousands of tendrils so that each is connected with thousands of neighbouring cells, each of which is constantly exchanging impulses. These 12 to 14 billion cells with their thousands of connecting tendrils make the human mind into an unparalleled computer. The electronic activity in one human brain is the equivalent of all the world's TV and radio combined. The human brain doesn't miss a thing. It's capable of writing music, appreciating beauty, reasoning, calculating data about the universe, and it's capable of receiving a message from God. And Paul brings that out in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 where he says that we should know the mind of Christ. Now no human computer can do such a thing, but the human brain can. And what we put into it determines to a great extent what comes out. As we quoted some different men today, that is what they are saying. The scriptures and the writers of the scriptures have been alluring to it and stating of these facts for many years. Go back to Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 7. It says, "For as a man thinketh within himself, so is he." If we're going to have a pure mind and a holy mind, the first thing we need is the desire to have one. I was reading about a British university, a group of students were asked this question: what do you want to be? Now, I guess every person asks themselves that question if they're not asked it of someone else. What do you want to be? But in this group of students at this British university, they were asked this question. Different guys got up, and some said, "I wanted to be a politician," and others wanted to be a champion athlete, others wanted to be a scientist, etc. Shyly, yet definitely, one student got up, and what he said caused thoughtful silence. And he said this: "You may laugh at me, but I wish to be a saint, or I want to be a saint." Imagine a desire to be a saint. Now, whatever his concept of sainthood is, many in our secular society would view that ambition as eccentric. What's my desire? Do I desire to have a pure mind? Do I regard it as important? Paul in Colossians chapter 3 verse 2, he says, "Set your mind on things above." Now the Authorised says affections, but the word is mind. "Not on earthly things." Now where my heart is, there will my desires be. Do I regard having a pure mind as important? If I have no regard for it, will I seek it? the scriptures tell us if we're going to have peace of God, if God's going to guard my mind, I need purity of thought and I need a pure mind. What's my desire? Secondly, disciplines to be displayed. The weight of Paul's positives in this portion in chapter 4 demands a rejection of negative input. Really what Paul's saying demands, and can I read it in a different way, in a negative way, but what Paul said demands this. Whatsoever is untrue, whatsoever is ignoble, whatever is wrong, whatever is impure, whatever is unlovely, whatever is not admirable, if there be anything shoddy or unworthy of praise, do not think on these. Now, was Paul naive and he had no idea what went on in the world around about him? If you've got that thought about Paul and his naivety, read Romans chapter 1. Paul knew precisely what went on in the world around about him. He knew how man thought. He knew how man acted. And he could see the depths to which humanity would go if he allows his mind to just be undisciplined. So it demands discipline. Now, we've got to be careful in what we eat. Just because it looks good or it tastes okay doesn't mean that it is. I was reading a story of some people, and they were in America, and they were holidaying beside Lake Ontario. And so they went fishing. And he caught, I've forgotten what the type of fish that he caught were, but they were nice fish. It was a warm day and he was very well prepared, so as soon as he caught the fish, he bled the fish and he put them on ice. And you'd say, you can't do any more than that. I know when we go fishing, they can stay in the water and we'll leave them till the end of the day before we eat them, before we do anything much with them. But this guy, he did everything we would consider to be right. He caught these fish, he bled them straight away and he put them on ice. That night, he cooked them, ate them, and they tasted superb. And he's sitting back and he's saying, boy, you don't get it much better than these. Beautiful fresh fish being cooked, chilled and eaten. How can you have anything better? But he was wrong. The Environmental Protection Agency has banned the eating of fish and the commercial use of fish from Lake Ontario, because tests have shown that fish in the lake carry high levels of Murex. Now, that is a chemical that's used to poison and control ants. And the problem with this chemical is it increases your risk of cancer tremendously. So what seemed pleasant and okay was quite dangerous. Do we show discipline and care in what we feed into this marvellous brain mind of ours? If I look at the commercials on television, see them in magazines, hear them on the radio, we are to show discipline in what we eat. I mean, almost it's to this stage where you don't eat anything because it'll harm you. But we're so careful. We've got to watch for heart disease. This is cancer forming. This causes high cholesterol. This does. We say it's harmful. We've got the idea that if it's good, it's not healthy. You remember that ad that don't tell him it's healthy because he likes it. But we've got such a phobia about what we feed our bodies for their growth and their physical well-being. Do we show the same concern about what we feed our mind? It's much more important You say as a Christian it doesn't really matter. Can I recount a story that Charles Colson tells? And as he tells the story, he said, I knew I was in trouble once I'd started out. But he says, I was highly embarrassed. And this is what it is. He was having dinner with one of the chief executives, or the president he was, of one of the three major television networks in America. And he thought, now here's a good opportunity to get a plug for some good programs on television, or entertainment on television. And he said, do you know there are 50 million born-again Christians in America? And the executive looked at him and he said, are you saying that we should put more good programs on television? And he said, yes, that's the latest Gallup poll, and that's what they said. Did you know about it? And he said, and the executive turns to Colson and he said, do you mean we should put programs on like Chariots of Fire? And he said, yes, that's a good program with a good Christian moral message. And the executive turns to Colson and he said, did you know the NBC showed that program just a couple of months ago? Do you know what the ratings were? And this is when Colson said, I knew now then that I was in trouble. That program, out of 65 rated that week, rated 57. The top program was one about the secret life of my mother and had all to do with her prostitution. But that's what society looks at. And Colson said, and the executive said to him this. He said, if half of your Christians watched Chariots of Fire, it had romped in number one. He said, if half had watched. Now, Colson went and did some more work. And he said, I come up with this statistic which staggered him. Christians and so-called born-again Christians watch the same programs as everyone else. Their viewing time is a half an hour a week less than non-Christians. They not only watch the same programs, they read the same material and magazines, they listen to the same music, and we wonder if we've got pure minds. What do we take in? What do we feed them? Listen to what the psalmist says. In Psalm 101 he says this, I will set no vile thing before mine eyes. Is it a challenge to you? It certainly challenged me. What do I allow my mind to take in? As a man thinketh, so he is. So we're to discipline our minds in what its input is, in what we read, what we see, what we listen to, what we laugh at. Ask yourself this question. What are the last 5 books I read or magazines? Now, for some of us, that might be 5 years because we can only really read one book a year. Some people are capable of reading one a week and that's fair enough. And others, we know that. But what last 5 magazines or books did I read? What last 5 programs did I watch on television? The last few hours I listened to music, what were they? The last 5 times I laughed at a joke, what type of joke was it, or did I think was funny? Paul challenges us to have to discipline our minds and what goes in. Not only do we desire to have a holy mind, and if we desire it, it demands disciplined input. Another thing that's required is we've got to be careful that we don't become desensitized. And it's so easy to for desensitization to affect our minds. I was reading the story, and W.A. Creswell said this about himself when he was talking about being desensitized. He was pastor at Dallas Baptist Church in the heart of Dallas. It's a fairly large church, and to go to where his church was, from where he lived, he had to walk, and I've forgotten how many blocks it was. There were so many city blocks. But to walk from where he lived to get there, he had to pass, there was no way about it, but you had to walk past because it was just up the road, a house of ill repute. And he said, when I first started to do it, I cringed, and I used to have to deliberately cross the street and walk the other side of the street because I cringed to walk past. You'd see people outside, and I had no way I wanted to be seen anywhere near them. But he said, after a period of time, he said, I just used to walk straight through them, past them, and it didn't have any effect on me. He said, what that lifestyle, where once it offended me, I'd become desensitized. Didn't mean that I got involved in it, but he said, my mental state with being desensitized to what went on. This is an isolated experience. We get examples of it and illustrations of it in the scriptures. Think of David. Now, a tremendous king and a great king of Israel who wrote some tremendous psalms. And when God looked over his life, he could say of David that he was a man after my own heart. And if David could be desensitized by sin, how much more careful must I be? Now, there were three things that Deuteronomy, the Lord had told in Deuteronomy regarding a king that he wasn't to do. And the first thing that a king wasn't to do was to gather gold. And you notice if you read David's life and you in Kings and Samuel and Chronicles, that whenever he had a victory and he got gold, it was dedicated to the temple. He didn't keep it. When he had horses and he got a lot in battle, he didn't keep horses. And that was the second thing. Well, the third thing that a king of Israel wasn't to do. And the other thing that a king in Israel wasn't to do was to accumulate wives. Now, if you read David, it was one area where David fell down. Now, it wasn't adultery in David's day to have more than one wife. It was legal. It was culturally acceptable. But it was sin. Think what effect it had on David. He'd become desensitized. Not only did it affect David's life, and we see that he was desensitized and he fell into sin with Bathsheba, but him being desensitized, see what effect it had on his family. As I thought and about these portion, and it challenged me as a person. It challenged me as a Christian. It challenged me as a parent. And it challenged me as an elder of this assembly. How I can become desensitized to sin in my own life and allow things that are culturally acceptable, they may be indulgences, but they can take me down. Proverbs again, and it's Solomon, he writes in Proverbs 4 and 23, and he says this, above all else, guard my heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Discipline our minds. Ensure they're not desensitized by what indulgences that I have. Paul, in this portion, he refers them back to people whose God is their belly. Now, what he's really saying is they are They were really only interested in self-gratification. They wanted the benefits of the cross, but not its demands. It was a problem that had come into Corinth, and Paul had to deal with it, and it was a teaching, and that it was evident in what in their lives in Corinth, and Paul had to deal with it. He's saying here, don't let how you live, they're living, these people around about, they live for themselves and they're the enemies of the cross of Christ. Don't think like them, act like them, live like them and think like them. They only think about earthly things, and he said, don't think about them. Their end and their destiny is hopeless. We've spent a long time on negatives and discipline, but now he comes to a diet. And are you saying to me, now, boy, I'm more like a reader of the scriptures? Well, they fit the category, but that's not what Paul's saying at all. We need to take in the scriptures and we need to read them daily. I was reading about one of the generals in the Second World War, and then he was involved in the Korean conflict, and he headed the United Nations negotiating team at the end of the Korean conflict. And from the time he was 20 until he was 90 and his eyesight had failed him, he made a habit of reading the Old Testament once a year and the New Testament four times a year. And I thought, boy, if he didn't have a demanding life, who did? Now, in the heat of battle, he obviously didn't do it, and he said that. But when he had a break of a couple of days, he could catch up. And when he was 90 and his eyesight had failed, he was up to date. He'd read the Old Testament 70 times and the New Testament 280 times. People that came in contact with him, didn't matter what side of the fence they were, they remarked at his knowledge of the scriptures and how he applied them to everything that he did. But it was no wonder. But what does Paul say is to be positive in our diet, into our thinking, and let's read it. Can we read it again? Verse 8. Whatsoever things are true. Now, he doesn't mean just in contrast to lies, but he means this. Whatsoever things are genuine. Whatsoever things are sincere. Whatsoever things are honest. In other words, whatsoever things claim respect. Now, Paul uses that also of persons. And you'll read that if you read 1 Timothy 3 and 8, and he also talks about it in Titus. But he says, whatsoever things are honourable, whatsoever things are just. Now, that is by both divine and human standards. It's right conduct. Now, sure, the scriptures are involved, but there's a lot more than the scriptures. But what do I fill my mind? Because what goes in determines who I am. Whatsoever things are pure, that is free from all that is corrupt. Now it has the idea of purification resulting from dedication in sacrifice, that thought there. Whatsoever things are lovely, in other words, that which produces a sense of love because of its beauty, purity or holiness. Whatsoever of good report, in other words, good sounding, well spoken, attractive, winning. If there be any virtue, that which denotes preeminent estimation. In secular usage, it has to do with moral excellence. whatsoever is praiseworthy, if there be anything praiseworthy. Think, reckon, make these the subjects of your thoughtful consideration. Think on these. As a church, what will distinguish us from others? We could say, oh, we've got more people going here than anywhere else. Is that really important? I'm not denouncing it. I'd love that. Don't get me wrong. But as a church, wouldn't it be nice to be distinguished as Christians? Because we have Christian minds. We have minds that rejoice in the gospel. We have minds that are humble and that desire to follow the example of our Master, the Lord Jesus. We have minds that are occupied with things above and there because that's where our destiny is. And we have minds that are desirous to be pure and that we have holy minds. Can I just finish? It's time's gone. There was a famous psychoanalyst named Alfred Adler, who at the end of a consultation with a client would ask this question: what would you do if you were cured? Then the patient would give an answer. And Adler would listen, and then opening the door would reply, well then go and do it.